This podcast is kindly supported by Resolute Investment Managers, Inc. and 91 Asset Management. Resolute Investment Managers, Inc. is a diversified multi-affiliate asset management platform that partners at more than 30 best-in-class affiliated and independent investment managers. It offers a unique platform that delivers strategic value through the full suite of distribution, operational, and administrative services available to affiliates and partners. 91 Asset Management is a global asset manager with emerging markets roots that brings a different perspective to active and sustainable investing. Our next guest is not afraid to be bold when it comes to the vision of what financial services can be. As Chief Strategy Officer at Northwestern Mutual, President of Retail Investments, and Head of Institutional Investments, she spearheads a unique approach to financial planning that combines insurance, investments, and annuities. Hear how they knit together to allow clients to protect and prosper, and why staying grounded is key to being able to rise. I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the world of investment by focusing on its people and their stories. I'm joined today by Aditi Javeri-Gokhale, who is Chief Strategy Officer, President of Retail Investments, and Head of Institutional Investments at Northwestern Mutual, based in Milwaukee. In her role, she leads teams that manage more than $627 billion in company and client assets, including more than $310 million in the general account and over $280 billion in retail client assets. She's also accountable for Northwestern Mutual Future Ventures, the company's venture investing arm, and the consumer digital disruptor Wish. Welcome, Aditi. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Ifin. How are you?
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming here onto the podcast. And we'd love to start, before we launch into your role as a leader and your focus today, we could go back into your background and talk a little bit about what brought you to this role in Northwestern Mutual.
So, you know, in terms of my background, I was born and raised in Mumbai, India. And I took my first international flight to Boston to study at MIT, and I had a full four-year tuition grant scholarship. I grew up in a progressive middle-class family, and my parents and my family were very supportive of me, I guess even then, taking risks. I'd never flown internationally in my life. And so with $150 in my pocket, I decided to come to MIT. I spent 4 years at MIT. Actually, five. I did my undergrad, my bachelor's, and then I also went to the Sloan School of Management. That's when I started my career in consulting with Booz Allen Hamilton. Since then, I worked for some pretty amazing brands, American Express, Travelocity, Nutrisystem. And then I joined an acquisition that Northwestern Mutual had done of a company called LearnVest. I was always a client of Northwestern Mutual way before I joined NM. And that's when I started my career at Northwestern Mutual.
And obviously lots of different parts in that journey. But I'd say just looking back, were there any surprising turns going from consulting into a role here? Anything that maybe you wouldn't have foreseen?
I think when I was in consulting, I really enjoyed sort of the strategic foundation that you get with any top consulting company. And it's very fast-paced. And so I think one of the things that I found to be unique is moving from consulting to moving to a corporate job. It was much more about collaboration and alignment, a lot more meetings than I had in management consulting. But at the end of the day, what I really loved about my first corporate job was the fact that I got to manage a P&L. I was accountable, which was very different from when you're in consulting, where you're sort of in this advisory role.
And then in terms of the progression to this leadership role, you came in via an acquisition entity. How did you then go about, was it intentional, this progress to stay in and to move into leadership? Were you handpicked to do this? What was the path there?
I think it was a combination of both. I joined as the chief marketing officer of LearnVest. And then within the first year, I was asked to be the first chief marketing officer of Northwestern Mutual. Now, of course, my background prior to LearnVest was beyond marketing. I'd done customer experience, digital marketing, technology, data analytics. But, you know, I took that role because I so admired the company. I mentioned to you that I was a client I still believe I have the best advisor. And so I really was looking for a way to create impact. And so if it was being the first CMO, that's what I took. And I reinvented the marketing department and how you think about marketing. With that, of course, I drove results. And so I was given the opportunity to add communications. And then I started to lead corporate strategy. Some of these I was handpicked for. Some of these were part of a conversation. But I think the consistent theme across was about challenging the status quo, thinking outside the box, and of course, at the end of the day, the ability to build a team and to drive results.
And I think an aspect of that thinking outside the status quo is around future-proofing. And clearly looking, as a marketing officer, you're looking outside at the evolution of an industry and thinking about your company's role in that future. So in particular, there have been a lot of innovative aspects of Northwestern Mutual over recent years. And in particular, you have spearheaded a unique approach to financial planning, combining insurance, investments, and annuities. Can you talk a little bit about the vision behind that?
Absolutely. So you know that Northwestern Mutual is the number one life insurance company in the United States. And also on the wealth side, we are one of the fastest growing independent broker dealers. But Northwestern Mutual is a mutual company. And what that means is we are in the service of our policyholders and our clients. And so our mission is to build financial security. And what I saw was most companies didn't do it in the way that we and our, when I say we, I mean our advisors, and the philosophy of the company was very different. A lot of other companies, they take an investment-only approach to financial security and then add the risk aspect, the insurance aspect on an as-needed basis. But what we had internally started to develop is a value proposition that we firmly believe it's resonating with our policyholders and our clients, is what we call protect and prosper. So protect is the insurance side of the business. It's about making sure that you are protected through life's uncertainties, whether it is disability, death, things that you really don't want to think about, but truly have to be considered so that you can take care of your family. And prosper, which is the wealth side of the equation. But what we also found is the integration of insurance, investments, and annuities, and our approach to this leads to better client outcomes. And what I mean by that is, and we've got studies now, both from academia and with consulting companies like EY, where a holistic approach to planning delivers greater accumulation in terms of portfolio values, 14% higher retirement income, and 28% more legacy funding. So this approach is something that's in the best interest of our clients, and that's the strategic vision that I spearheaded.
And that really accords with everything I'm seeing in terms of the direction of financial advice. It has been much more tailored, much more human-centered, much more focused on that holistic wraparound. And I think the two questions, in the words of another guest, are, am I going to have enough and am I going to be okay? And of course, this protect and prosper very much echoes that. So I like the way it aligns. When you look to the future then, some of the innovative strategies that you're putting in place, you have a venture arm that we discussed, Northwestern Mutual Future Ventures. Can you speak yes. a little bit about that and what the opportunity set you think is looking out on the horizon?
One of the exciting parts of my role, and of course, I wear different hats depending on the need of the hour, is what you mentioned, Northwestern Mutual Future Ventures. It's a $200 million venture capital fund. We invest in seed stage or Series A companies. And the true intent, one of the big reasons why it's exciting, is because you get to see, honestly, hundreds and thousands of ideas and really bright entrepreneurs who are thinking about things differently. So we see it, of course, financial returns when it comes to, and we're in the top quartile in terms of returns for the VC, and those matter. But from a strategic perspective, it's thinking about what lies ahead. So of course, now, you know, the big theme is AI. And we are looking at different companies when it comes to AI, when it comes to technology, when it comes to data analytics. And how does that fit with the mothership, Northwestern Mutual? So it's been a very, very interesting way of gaining insights and sometimes partnering with these companies for Northwestern Mutual or getting insights to be able to then replicate some of the work that has been done within the company. You know, one such idea that started as an idea is a company called Wish. Wish is a digital disruptor in the insurance space. It is absolutely independent of Northwestern Mutual. The products are entirely different. It is really about focusing on the DIY market. It is a very low-cost product. But part of the reason why we decided to create Wish was to see how our DIY customers, which are very different from our core customers at Northwestern Mutual, how do they think about insurance? How do they experience insurance? So very excited about that company. It's starting to scale and more to come on that.
And speaking about AI disruption, so I think we're all probably still wondering, I suppose, the extent to which AI will disrupt the financial services industry. Although it does seem that when it comes to insurance, it's already being used to great value in terms of calibrating risk and tailoring perhaps risk management. So have you any sense through maybe through the work with the venture arm or otherwise as to how it will transform the industry we're in, AI and maybe our interaction with customers?
This is a much broader topic than a 35-minute discussion. I've had conversations with many of my peers within the industry and even outside of the industry. I think there are sort of two groups as we think about AI. There's one group that's sort of doing the wait and see approach, or maybe three groups. One is doing the wait and see approach. The second is sort of much more about thinking of AI in terms of testing, learning, experimentation. And then the third is what I would say the entrepreneurial group that's just sort of figuring out different ideas and coming up with whether it's creating efficiencies or whether it is creating value in some way. The way we're looking at it from a Northwestern Mutual perspective is we're looking at it more from a test, learn, experiment. We're looking at AI in terms of efficiencies. We're looking at AI in terms of an asset of how do we infuse AI to unlock value and create efficiencies. I would say from our vantage point, when I've talked to some of my peers, we're definitely ahead in the insurance space.
And I'd love to now, just before we discuss leadership, have a little bit of a look through your marketing lens. Coming in with a marketing lens is often very useful in terms of brand building, in terms of intentionality around the brand and a very central, keeping that central. How do you think you've applied the lens that you bring, having had so much experience in marketing, to your role today?
Yeah, I think one of the key aspects of financial security, and when you think about, and I've spoken to hundreds, if not thousands of policyholders and clients, I think there is a rational side to how you think about money and financial security. And then there is an emotional side in how you think about money and financial security. And sometimes the emotional side overtakes the rational side. And I think in terms of having that marketing experience, it gives me a better lens of sentiment, how people think, how people connect. So for example, we are a company that is advisor-led, right? We've got advisors and staff, 20,000 of them across the country. And we are firm believers that when you think about financial planning, it has to be advisor-led with the digital experience in terms of capabilities to create efficiencies. And that is what works because different people think about money differently, and it is very unique to your hopes, goals, and dreams. And I think having that experience, prior experience in marketing, has allowed me as chief strategy officer or as I head the wealth business to have a different and a unique perspective of how to manage a business.
We're going to take a short break from the program to chat with one of the sponsors of this podcast, Resolute Investment Managers. I sat down with Jay Schilling, Vice President. So Jay, when you look across the product landscape, what excites you in terms of where you see patches of growth?
I would say there's four main areas that we are extremely excited about. So first is the opportunities within active ETFs. I mean, I still think that we are kind of at the tip of the iceberg here within what solutions that were in traditional or maybe legacy or more antiquated structures that can actually be not watered down in an active ETF structure. So we were arguably one of the pioneers, of course, in the space with ARK Invest, going back to 2016. And since then, we've subsequently launched an American Beacon ETF platform. We've started with the partnership that we have with our friends from across the pond, the Man Group. So we launched two liquid alternative strategies in ETF format as well, and those are actively managed. So active ETFs is one. Second would be digital assets. We are officially mainstream with the Bitcoin spot ETFs, and we think that's here to stay, and there's going to be a tremendous amount of product development, creativity, new product structures, and then potentially new digital assets that are going to be available in spot ETFs. And that's kind of just kicked off here in the beginning of 2024 with SEC approval. So that's a big one, certainly in the mix there. The third one is CITs. We are doing a major push in the retirement channels as we view, so two things, the structure and the technology is ready for prime time in the DCIO and the retirement plan platform market. Historically, it was just for mega cap retirement plans that a CIT would be available. Today, the technology is now there for the small plan market, for financial advisors that are focused on the DCIO space to be able to access CITs that are, you know, lower cost than a traditional mutual fund. And then lastly, it's bringing our institutional separate account business into the retail market with model delivery SMAs. Model delivery SMAs, again, because of the technology, is going to be a huge push for us to be able to get what has historically been institutional separate account strategies at, let's say, endowments to the retail investor at a $25,000 minimum, $5,000 minimum, or maybe $100,000.
And now back to the show.
And moving now to leadership style. So how would you characterize your leadership style and maybe how has that evolved over time?
My leadership style has evolved over the last 25 years. I see myself definitely as a student who always wants to learn and improve. I think leadership doesn't start with the leader. It really starts with the people and the teams. And I'm a big believer of that. I would say my leadership style is leading with humanity. And I think this is of utmost importance to me. Whichever industry you're in, I think this especially became important during the pandemic and post the pandemic. Different employees and team members have different ways of what matters to them. And I think the most important part of being a leader is to be transparent and authentic with your teams. And I think that's how you start building relationships and that's how you start building trust, which to me is a very important aspect of how you would lead. The other part of my leadership is I set bold visions for my team and I expect strong results from them. But this vision is not set by me alone. It's set by me and my leaders so that they feel accountable and they feel that they have a voice and skin in the game. And then, of course, then you set measurable targets for results. So those are the three aspects of my leadership style that I would say are probably more prominent today, but it's an evolution.
And how about values? Because I think always values kind of go with a brand and a brand will have a value statement and there will be maybe a set of values in a team. And of course, the leader as well as the team members have to live those values as a show of this authenticity.
Right. And I think when you talked about values, I think that's where I started, right? Leading with humanity, talking about building trust and being transparent and authentic gets you to really build a connection and make sure you have a common value system and you have a culture in which every unique person can thrive. So that to me is what I meant by the first thing, is that the values, the culture matters more than anything else. And then of course, the business side is setting the vision and driving the measurable results. But for you, you've got to first build the trust, make sure this is what you and your team stands for, no matter what. And then from there, you start to work on what the business objectives are.
And then I think one of the true development points of a leader is taking that executive experience into a non-executive role, maybe on a board or committees, yep, or, you know, learning from peers in that way and having that kind of osmosis between that one role and another. I have had a number of board roles. Can you speak a little bit about what you think makes an effective board director or chair of those boards in your view?
I think the most important thing is that you need to think about being on a board because you truly want to be on that board. So you need to feel really excited or passionate about the company and the brand. And you need to feel like back to the values and the culture of that company are consistent with what you're doing. And I've met plenty of people who've come to me and said, I just need a board role because that's the right thing to do. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think to me, as a board member, considering a board seat, it's important that you connect with the company. The second thing, of course, is around as a board member, a good board member, you've got to make sure that you're focused on governance, your duty, your fiduciary duty, making sure that the company is operating at its highest level of integrity. And that's important. That is the key part of it. But then the third part of it is also about bringing an outside experience. So you come in with a completely different experience to what the management team and what the business is, and making sure that you are asking the right strategic questions, making sure you are guiding the management team to think holistically, to recognize blind spots or opportunities. I think that makes a very interesting, engaging conversation and also a really good board member.
And it's interesting because I think governance is not necessarily getting better in the world. I think as things get more complex and maybe our hybrid existence places strains on cultures, I think it is even more important perhaps to have that governance function. We can still see governance failures abound. So it is a particularly, I think, important challenge today.
Oh, for sure. And it's getting even more complex, right? Especially in the financial services world. And so I think that is, to me, the number one priority of a board member.
Let's get back to some personal reflections now. So looking back at your career, were there any setbacks or challenges that you learned lessons from?
I think it goes without saying that for me, I have had setbacks and challenges right from when I decided to make the bold move to take two suitcases and travel halfway around the world. And I think I've always looked at setbacks and challenges as learning opportunities. So for me, of course, there is an element of self-reflection. What could have I done better? What did I do? How can I learn from this experience? And then sort of make sure that you learn from it. And when another opportunity presents itself or another challenge presents itself, you apply those learnings. I'm glad you called it sort of a setback versus like a failure. That's why I started by saying I always feel like I'm a student, a constant learner. And a setback is just another way of thinking about learning for the next opportunity.
And Paddy, you mentioned your parents and the fact that they encouraged you to take risk. Was that something that they themselves would have done? Was that something that during your childhood, you were quite used to the idea of those two suitcases and getting on an airplane and taking off?
I think my parents have always encouraged my sister and me to be looking beyond the obvious, trying to take those risks. And dad and mom always said that, you know, you always have home. That's your sort of landing pad. So don't worry about it. So when I did decide to apply to US universities, we didn't really have family in the United States at that point. And the conversation was, give it a year. And if it doesn't work out, you always have home. And even to this day, I think my philosophy has always been around taking one day at a time, 1 hour at a time, 1 second at a time. Don't think too much into, you know, 10, 20 years from now, other than doing financial planning with your advisor. Be in the moment, enjoy the moment, and really try to see how you can get out of your comfort zone and create impact.
And speaking of impact, key people across your trajectory, did you have any particular mentors or sponsor along this way, or anybody that made a particular impression on you as you went through?
You know, I have been fortunate enough to have many mentors and advisors throughout my 20 plus career now. I don't have a formal mentor-mentee. I've never had a formal mentor-mentee relationship. And most of my mentors are not people that are senior than me or within the industry. I think the most important aspect for me, and again, every person has a different way of how they think about leadership and development and mentoring. For me, the people that I've connected with most are the people who have understood me, understood my value system, and have not been afraid to tell me and give me direct feedback and tell me how I need to improve. And also when you're down, lift me up. So it's less about how do I solve this business problem. I think mentoring has been more about professional or personal setbacks or professional and personal opportunities.
And in terms of any wisdom or creed or motto, I think we've already touched on a little bit of this in terms of your attitude to new opportunities and perhaps a framing of setbacks as learning opportunities and being a student. But would you say there are any particular motto or creed that you live by that you can leave us with as words of wisdom?
I think the motto that I have always thought about and sort of believed in is what my dad has always told me, which is eye on the sky and feet on the ground. So think big, think beyond the obvious, be bold, but always stay very humble. So feet on the ground, make sure you're grounded because you will have opportunities, but don't let that ever get into your head.
Well, thank you so much, Aditi. You say that the motto at one level of the company is protect and prosper. And I think that this is what unites these three strands of the business that we talk about in a holistic way. And you have shown how you can think boldly. And I think this podcast has shown just how that all links together in terms of your trajectory, the ability to set brands and to develop them and to think about the end user. So there's been a lot of content here, but I want to thank you for sharing your wisdom and insights with us.
Thank you so much. It's been so wonderful to be here on this podcast.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.